So the idea is that we should have very simple formalism which somehow captures or is close enough to the notions of equivalence. I guess that in the lecture we have already covered strong bisimilarity, weak bisimilarity to one, okay, and trace equivalence. So ideally we should have a formalism which is at least invariant under strong bisimilarity, which means that if you have two states which are strongly dissimilar, they are as good as, well, maybe not identical, but they should be described by the same formulas. And on the other hand, if they are described the same, they are described by the same formulas, well, at least in some cases it would be nice, it would be almost like strongly dissimilar. And this should be also a formalism which has nice computational properties, which is not too complex, like first order logic, for example, you know, right, from Groen. So of course we could design first order logic for label transition systems very naturally. So for every A in the set of actions, you think of binary relation RA, or however, whatever symbol you want to use for this. And then you can write all sorts of formulas such like there exists X such that or there exists Y such that X is in the relation with Y, and Y is not related by A to itself. So something which should, this kind of formula would be satisfied by this process, if this is our X, right? Fine enough. But is this a good formalism? I mean, first of all, we know that the first order logic is not decidable. I don't know if you remember this from Groen, or whether this was mentioned somewhere. You remember what it means to be decidable, or maybe it was used even here in this, the notion was used in this lecture. And moreover, I also said that the formalism should have some connection with the notion of a trace of process equivalence that we have, like bisimilarity. So let's consider, on the one hand, label transition system. Like this, and on the other hand, something like this. Are these two guys dissimilar? Actually, it's the first opportunity to play our dissimulation game.
Well, it's an infinite game.
Sorry?
It's an infinite game.
Do you remember the game characterization of dissimulation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, the way in which you could show that these two guys, these two states and these two LDSs are dissimilar would be by playing their game. So, who wants to be attacker, who wants to be defender? Who is in a better position here? Attacker or defender?
Well, defender.
Exactly. So, okay, you'll be the defender and you'll be the attacker. So, what do you want to play? But you don't have much choice, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it is more fun to play if you have at least two or three transitions so that you can make some non-trivial choices. Okay, that was a stupid
idea. But I
can
decide which transition system to choose, but yeah.
Yeah, but at any rate, we probably see that you are screwed, right? So, whichever you choose, you can only go A, and then the opponent goes A, and then another A, and you keep playing like this. It's clearly a winning strategy. Whichever you're going to do. So these guys are a bit similar, but here this formula is satisfied because all these guys are not reflexive with relation to A. There is no A loop, but this guy sees something which is a loop, A loop. So this formula is not satisfied here. So first order logic, even though this is the most standard formalism or language that we see in computer science, is probably not such a good candidate for formalism should be tailored for this reasoning about Milner's formalism, or in general about concurrency and transition systems. So what we are going to do, we are going to design very simple logic, which would be in fact modal logic in this case. Have you seen modal logic somewhere? Was it mentioned? I don't know. Did anybody attend ontologies, for example? That's a magic story. Okay, so this is why we don't call us when modal logic is discussing some detail. So this would be, in particular, here we are doing it in a particular simple way, so we'll have a formalism without any variables even. So given a set of actions ACT, we are going to define Hennessy-Milner logic. I'm not sure, so far probably there were no formalisms or logics in the lecture, so I can go for the Greek letters as well. In the following way. We have constant term for both for false and for true. Is this the one that you are accustomed to? False, true.
Yeah.
And then, well, we can write conjunctions and disjunctions of our formulas. So correctly, it would be phi, comma, psi. Phi and psi. Phi or psi. And then we have diamond A phi, this is how I'm going to read it, box A phi, for any A in the set of actions. That's it. This is our format.
Is there a not phi?
No.
Okay.
But this is a good question, why there is no. And notice that I have no propositional variables here. So it is not even what is normally known most of the time as full-blown modal logic, because even in this restricted modal formalism, one has propositional variables. And actually, after we give formal semantic definition of semantics for this guy, for this language, sorry, we will see why we don't even need to explicit this negation. We will be able to prove that even though we don't write explicit negation of any formula, there is always for any formula something in this language, in HML. Actually, I should write HML over a set of actions, but we are not so pedantic to make this explicit. There is always a formula which is distinguishing. There is always a formula which is equivalent to a negation of other formula. But first of all, we have to give semantics, and semantics would be very simple. So we will think of all possible. So given a label transition system. I don't know if this was the convention used in the lecture. I'm trying to follow the book, which I think was mostly used here. And is this how Professor Schroeder was writing Lego transition system? As triples, where first you have all the processes, actions, and separately, and then. Actually, this is strictly speaking not necessary. Right? We could just write processes, actions, and then here processes, and then all the interpretations for the actions, where this is parameterized already by the actions. So, given a Lego transition system like this, I don't know what was the notation for this, like calligraphic F, is it good, or what was normal F, or W?
We often have just T or something.
Yeah. T. Okay, whatever. given a transition system like this, we are going to define a semantics of formulas of HML in T using in terms of a subset of the set of processes. And of course, the only choice that we have is to give an inductive definition. So, actually, this formalism is so beautifully and stupidly simple that I can even ask you to help me. So, what do you think would be the interpretation of bottom, of false? Well, is there any process which can satisfy false?
No.
So it has to be empty, right? The interpretation of proof constant. This is not so good, look, because we are using this T here and here. And, maybe I'll write calligraphic T. Please forgive me. You don't have to change it in your notes, but at least.
Professor Schroeder said it doesn't really matter because they're never in a position where you could really...
Sure. I know. But, you know, it doesn't look hygienic. But I said this
even saying that.
Okay, so then what is the candidate for truth constant? What should be the set? Well, every state satisfies two. The constant top. So it has to be the set of all processes that we have in our process language or whatever. You can probably guess what is going on with conjunction disjunction, right? And the very same thing is happening with this function. Okay, this is not interesting. The interesting part is those funny new connectors. So let us define what is, maybe let's write it like this, although I won't be so pedantic to write those dots every time. So for a while, let's try to pretend that we're really distinguishing between the syntactic connective and actual operational sets. So for a given subset of the set of processes, we are defining this guy as the set of all the processes such that I don't like to write y is a relation with x other than the other way around. Such that there exists x in x to which y can reach by action a. This is the notation used to define that. And then, similarly, the interpretation of box will be a set of those processes such that for every x in x, for every x such that y can reach x by a, it follows that the small x is in the capital X. So, whichever successors, A successors you have, assuming that you have any, of course, all those guys are in X. So, this guy is very modest fragment or shadow of existential quantifier that we know from Renard's or the logic, and this guy is modest counterpart of universal quantifier that we know from first-order logic. But we are only doing quantification among those guys which can be reached from a given point. Which can be reached from a given point using the chosen action. And notice that here, even though these connectives behave a bit like quantifiers, we are not introducing really any bound variables. Bound variables will appear in the next lecture, where you are going to extend this syntax into something more powerful, namely fixed point extension or extension of HML with recursion. But this will happen next. For timing, we need to understand well how this simple language works. Oh, speaking of next lecture, I forgot that I have items to speak to. Maybe I left it in my office. This is mine. No, okay. Yeah, here they are. So. Which of these is for the roots of what Stefan? Yes. Yeah. Okay, so we have our language. Now let's practice this a little bit. Of course, I already suggested that one of the properties that this language should have is that it cannot distinguish bisimilar states or processes. Maybe before we prove this formally, we can play around a little bit with examples of concrete formulas. So, first of all, is this formula true here? I'm using now different terminology. I'm talking about formulas being true somewhere. So, in order to make it a bit more precise, we could introduce another definition of semantics for this language, where instead of defining everything in terms of subset of processes, we pretend that we're doing something slightly different, and we give satisfaction definition, just like semantics we define for first-order logic. But now there will be slight difference. So when you are defining definition, when you are defining semantics of first-order logic, you are giving it in terms of a model. So models are those guys, this T, and a evaluation of individual variables. And now there are no individual variables to evaluate, but instead the satisfaction relation has one more parameter, namely state processes. So now we are going to define satisfaction, or sometimes it's written as forcing relation, but this is more mathematical or theoretical, which is a subset of the set of HML formulas times the set of processes times this is what I should say. Actually, to make it very even more pedantic, I should write it as a ternary relation, where this T is, it would be a relation between labeled transition systems times the set of the processes times the HML formulas, but that would require really dependent types to define formally. Okay, so let's define it like this. And we will write the variables for our processes being used were P, Q, and R. So we will write that P is in this relation with phi, but rather as P forces phi, and we drop P wherever it doesn't lead to confusion. So now we could give a semantic satisfaction definition, Tarski style, in the same way as we gave satisfaction definition for Bloin, in Bloin for first order logic. So first of all, the process forces follows never. So alternatively, we could write simply this. A process always pulses stop constant. A process so maybe instead of doing this, I will write explicitly at the beginning the transition system that we're talking about. A process pulses conjunction of formulas if and only if it forces phi and it forces psi. So this is how we normally translate linguistic or formal conjunction into metalinguistic or semantic conjunction. And similarly, and there exists, so I was writing here x and y, and I should be writing all the time p and q. Sorry, that was a bit confusing, but I hope it's not so bad. So there exists q such that p can make transition to q by a, and q forces phi. So here we made this connection with existential and universal quantification even more obvious. And obviously, for all q such that p can access q by a, we have that q forces, sorry, should have been 5. Okay, so now we have these two definitions, and an obvious theorem that I leave to you as easy exercise is to show inductively that these two definitions coincide. Maybe here. So, for any labeled transition system, and for any process P in the set of its processes, we have that P, and for any phi in power h and l syntax, we have that T and P pulse phi if and only if P belongs to the denotation of, to the T denotation of phi. Right? So this is obvious. Lemma. And proof left us exercise. So these are the trigger. So now that we made everything super formal, we can go back to this to this simple exercise and double check if we understand the definition. So, thus, let's say if this is our process P, does this P satisfy formula time on the 8th top? Why?
Yeah, well, Diamond says there needs to exist a transition with A, well, that exists, and the following state of course satisfies top because everything satisfies top.
So the formula diamond action top means that there is something that you can reach by top. How about this formula? Which state satisfies this guy?
Well, it means that B needs to be part of action with
What just do you mean, part of action?
Well, B must be an action.
I didn't make specific what is the set of action in our LTS, so let's assume that it includes at least A and B.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Of course, might always very clear what the set of action is.
Well, it feels that's true.
Exactly. Yeah. So, even though you have bottom or false here, because you have this universal quantification here, it's if you have no de-successor rules whatsoever, it is vacuous quantification. So we are saying, for all Q such that P can access Q by B in this case, but this is an empty set. So then you can say anything that you want. And it's a phenomenon that you have probably seen already in Gloin, just like we know that the sum of the empty set is the empty set, but the intersection of the empty set where it would have to be the whole universe if it exists. And this is useful, so this is actually a good point to ask ourselves another control question. It is always the case that box A phi is contained in diamond A phi. Well, it is not very formal, so I should write something like this. But really, I will not be bothered sometimes when you're writing those semantics. Brackets. So here we are saying that all A successors of my process satisfy phi, and here we are saying that some A successor of my process satisfy phi. So there should be some logical connection between those two, but what is exactly this connection?
Well,
so
the existence is implied on not on the left side but on the right side.
So how about this formula here? Is it satisfied by any state here?
No.
Because that would mean that there exists a de-successor which satisfies false, and we already know that this never happens. Right? So here we have already a very simple example of a formula where if you take this phi just to be bottom, it may already happen that this guy is not containing this phi.
Okay, question.
Yes?
the diamond B bottom formula is, in our case, already false because
yes.
there exists no
yes.
B transition, right? So it would also be false to write, or writing diamond B top would also be a false formula.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. We can. I mean, this is not a very nice. This is not a very inspiring LTS to practice because too many diamonds and boxes coincide, and there are not so many interesting things that you can say. Let me see if I can improvise a more inspiring example when we see all sorts of things happening and not happening. So first of all, let's have at least two transitions somewhere. For example, A transitions, and here you have B and group B. Let's call this guy S1, S2, S3. Right, so for example, is it true in, so is it true that S1, maybe I'll write it with the Spanish question marks. So is it true that S1 forces box A diamond A? Sorry, let me write an arrow because for some reason that we are going to see soon, this is still not particularly interesting. Yes, this is already slightly better, I think. So is it true that this S1 forces this formula?
Yes.
Yes. Because for all successors that we can, for all the processes that can be reached by action A, indeed, these are S2 and S3, and in both cases you can make a B step. How about this?
No.
Because this is an example of a state that you can reach by A, and there are no A transitions that you can make from S3. So, how about this thing? Yes. So, we have at least S3. Good, so we are beginning to get the feeling how this formalism works. Now there are a few things that one can prove about it, but maybe, so far I was only giving you examples obtained by trivially drawing something on the blackboard, but this is not how we normally specify processes. Normally we specify processes, this is probably what was happening so far in the lecture, by this recursive equations in CSS. So, what would be good examples? And they already should lead us somewhere, those examples. So, let's consider, yeah, I can erase, actually I can erase it. So let's consider first this guy plus this process, and then can you give me an example of a formula which would be true here? Is it clear what I mean by being true? I mean, processes, we already know using the structural operation semantics how to relate the syntactic definition of processes and labor transition system. So is there an example of a formula which should be true in one of those guys but not in the other?
Box A, diamond B, top. That's true in the second, but not in the first.
It is not true in the first?
Yes.
Okay, let's play around with our... So you are claiming that this guy... Yes, of course. So, because here you can make a transition to a place where you can only make C transitions, yes. Okay, so this was an these were examples of two processes which are not strongly similar. In this case, it doesn't matter strongly or weakly because there is nothing funny that can happen with tau transitions. But was there something else true about those relationships between those two processes? We have several notions of equivalence between processes, right?
They are trace equivalent.
So our formalism is not so bad in that it can distinguish actually between trace equivalent processes. Hopefully, it cannot distinguish between between dissimilar ones. Actually, why don't we prove it? So let's write PHML equivalent to Q if and only by definition for any file in HML. I'm dropping the set of actions everywhere, I'm keeping it implicit. P. So this is a state. This is a process in labor transition system T, and this is in T1, and this is in T2. P forces T1 by if and only if Q forces T1. So they satisfy exactly the same kind of similar formulas. What was the notation used for bisimulation, for, let's say for a strong bisimulation? Was it this?
Yep.
Okay. So our claim is bisimulation invariants. Actually, it can be. It is hardly well the name of a theorem, it is more of a lemma. Is that Hennessy linear logic has this property that modal logic did not have, that first order logic did not have, as we have seen at the beginning of the lecture, namely that bisimulation. The fact that the two processes are dissimilar implies they are Hennessy-Miner equivalent. We have seen an example at the beginning of two processes which are dissimilar but not first order equivalent. Okay, so maybe this is, again, this is straightforward exercise in, how would you prove it, again? By induction on complexity of formulas, on the structure of formulas. So I said that you can prove some very easy results, like equivalence of those two definitions of semantics of Hennessy-Miner logic by induction. I left this as exercise, but maybe this one we should actually prove ourselves. In not too formal way, but just to give an idea how it works. So the base cases are trivial, right? I mean, every state satisfies top, no state satisfies bottom. So there is not so much to prove. I mean, you cannot distinguish two processes by top or bottom. For conjunction and disjunction, we have the inductive assumption that. So let's assume that we have proof for phi that. So this is induction hypothesis that we have for phi that for any t, for any t1, t2, for any p1 in p1 and p2 in p2, p1 dissimilar to p2 implies e forces phi if and only if p p1 forces phi if and only if p2 forces phi, and similarly for psi. So now the question is, what happens for conjunction? Let's say, or disjunction, whichever one you prefer. We want to show that for any process, then for any pair of dissimilar processes, sorry, P1 forces P1 and P2, phi1 and phi2, even only if P2 forces phi and P1 forces phi and psi, even only if phi2 forces phi and psi. How do we do this? I mean, this is a trivial step. The interesting part is, of course, for the modal operators.
That is clear from the definition of the syntax.
Exactly. Right? Of the semantics.
Yeah.
So P1 forces phi and psi if and only if P1 forces phi and P1 forces psi. So this is definition of semantics. This is the induction hypothesis. And then again, by definition of semantics, we get. So we went through, traveled through a chain of equivalences. We can go in one direction, we can go in the other direction, everything is fine. I hope I don't have to do the case for all. Right. So the interesting part now. Because here we didn't use anywhere the fact that we are talking about dissimilar states. So now somehow, when we're talking about model operators, this dissimilarity has to be used. So P1 is dissimilar to Q1. P1 forces diamond A5. This means that exists Q such that P can make a step to Q, and Q forces phi. Now what?
Well, they are similar.
Exactly.
So there needs to be a, whatever you name it, maybe we could name this one Q1 and...
Yes, that would be better. Yes. So because these two guys are dissimilar, then Valens is... sorry, that was stupid.
Can we,
give up a similar to Pito. There exists Q2, such that P2 can make a step to Q2. And Q2 is similar to Q1. And now by induction hypothesis, this means that because Q1 satisfied phi, and the validity of phi was already, by induction hypothesis, preserved by dissimilarity. We have that Q2 versus phi. And in the same way in the other direction. I don't know if the directions were called Zik and Zak, or back and forth. You see all sorts of names in the literature. Do I have to explain the case for a box, or is it clear that the same game can be played? Shall we do box explicitly, or is it how it goes? That's good. Okay, so we have the easy direction, and you can try to think what goes wrong in case of first order logic. Why we couldn't do this easy proof to show that? Because clearly we cannot, right? The first order logic, validity of first order formula C is not preserved by simulation. What would be nice, and this would be probably the most interesting thing that we are going to do today, is to know to what extent we can go the other way, whether there is some converse to this theorem, which somehow says that if you cannot tell apart the two states in two processes using kind of similar formulas, there should be something about them being dissimilar or not. And before we address this this problem, maybe let's finish a few other little leftovers. So first of all, we had this question about negation. Can we now that we know exactly how semantics looks like and how this formalis works, is it clear that the set of these formulas, of kind of similar formulas, is really close under negation, even though there is no explicit negation in the language? If not, then let's do it for fun.
Well, at least from the definition as like subsets, I think it's clear because you can always take like the everything except the set of this subset of the processes and have your negation.
Uh-huh. Well, we need to do it in slightly more organized way. So, let's define inductively for a given formula in our HML. Let's define complement. Negation, well, not a formal negation, not a syntactic negation, but so this is what the complement of bottom is, of course, top. Right? The complement of top is, of course, bottom. What is the complement of conjunction of phi and psi? Do we remember any rules of the propositional calculus that we practice in Bloring that would help us now to define this? Negation of conjunction is disjunction of negations. Similarly, negation of disjunction should be conjunction of negations. What is this then? It is like negating existential quantifier. It is not true that there exists phi is for all x not phi. And this law works in this restricted setting as well. Okay. Should we practice this on a few examples? Not so easy clear. Aha, and now of course we need to say something, I mean it doesn't make sense to define something about stating a theorem or a lemma which tells us what do we define it this for. Fine, we have that T denotation of this complement that we define is exactly processes minus denotation. Again, proof exercise by induction. So it is possible when we have no variables in the model language, it is not even that necessary to introduce negation explicitly. If we had things like propositional variables, then you need to introduce also negation of propositional variables as primitives, but that's all. And one more thing that we didn't finish clarifying is what is exactly the relationship of box A phi and diamond A phi. So we have already seen that this is not true, that general, of course, because there are many cases when these things happen. This is not in general true that box A is containing phi, but we also have seen, do you remember what? This was this example that I have already erased in the blackboard, that the diamond A, even more obviously, does not have to be in general contain. I should write again this format, but I hope. Is it clear that when I'm writing inclusion between formulas, that I mean that for any labor transition system, the denotation of these guys will be, of the line on the left-hand side, will be included in the denotation on the right-hand side. And if I write negation of inclusion, I mean that there exists at least one labor transition system, where the denotation of this guy will be not included in the denotation of this guy. Because it's a bit messy to keep writing those additional semantics brackets. But maybe something. So, okay, in which cases then it would be true? That diamond A5 is contained in box A5.
Well, the case in which it isn't true is when there don't exist.
I'm not asking about a necessary and sufficient condition. I'm happy with a sufficient condition. So when I sufficient, but not necessary condition.
Well, any A's exist.
Sorry?
Any A's exist makes this true.
What do you mean any A exist?
Any transitions.
Every process is related to each other?
No, I'm just saying that if in the if in T,
yes,
there is a transition A, then this is true. This inclusion.
Well, remember again this example. So here we have the diamond A diamond A top was not included in box A diamond A top. Why this could happen? So why this inclusion of diamond A, where this file was taken to be box A diamond A top, why it could fail here? Because we had at least two different states being seen by A. So it was possible to have a weakness, a successor when phi hold, but it didn't mean that for all successor, this A successor, this phi had to hold. Because we had some choice. If we have a deterministic level transition system, where you cannot what's the notion of deterministic LTS introduced in the lecture? Deterministic meaning that
it's the same as for state machines.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you can really look at as LTSs as to in another way of looking at automata and or state machines. So this means that for any action and for any process or any element of your LTS, you can there is at most one. Process, one state, which can be reached by A. So, determinism. Because our language is so simple and we can have many dissimilar states which cannot be told in a given LTS, which cannot be told apart by model formulas, it is not. This formula will not really force determinism, but it is if your LTS is deterministic, then this holds. How about the other inclusion? What would be a sufficient condition for this?
Thank you.
do you think? A sufficient condition for box A phi being included in diamond I phi for any phi. So when this could go wrong? What were the examples where we had of processes where this was true, but this wasn't?
If there isn't a transition angle.
So if any state. Maybe let's make it a bit more interesting so that we don't have to look at all the possible actions, but because it was formulated with a single egg here, let's talk about that action. So if you do it with the case that you can always make a step from A, just like in this first example that I drew on the blackboard at the beginning of the lecture, then this formula is always true for any phi. So, if A is sufficient condition A is non-terminating or it doesn't get stuck. If we use this analogy with state machines and automata, there is also another name, seriality. If A is serial, so this means that for any Q, for any P there exists Q such that P is Q. So in particular, if we define our process. What was the notation used in definitions? Was it like A, K, or whatever?
A is good.
A is good, okay. So if we say that A is like this, this is clearly non-terminating or serial, right? Okay, so these were simple examples. In general, notice that if we have this and this, then we have this. So while this inclusion does not always hold, if we know that every successor satisfies phi, and I have some A successor, then this sum A then I have some A successor satisfying phi. Okay, so we learned all the interesting, well, not all the interesting rules, but most interesting rules of facts about Hennessy formulas of Hennessy-Miller logic, apart from the biggest one, this converse of dissimulation. Invariance. So, notice that this theorem, even though most of our examples, with one exception, and with this exception, were finite, this formula, this theorem did not make any restriction to finite Lagrange transition systems. And in fact, you probably can be convinced that in this all these finite examples, whenever you were Hennessy-Miller equivalent, you were dissimilar. Is it true in general? Well, let's have a look first at the situation where this goes well and when this goes wrong. Or maybe I will start with the situation where it goes wrong. So, let us define two different let's keep just the statement of the dissimulation variance so that we remember what we're trying to reverse. So let me define process A strictly smaller than omega as the sum of all the I know. Is this clear notation or you prefer not? For boldface and for natural numbers.
Both, okay.
Okay. A to the power of I. And let me also say that this guy is actually A omega, to make it more precise. Is the notation missing in my notes? Yes, I think so. Okay, so now let us compare A less than omega and A less than omega plus A omega. Ah, sorry, this is not correct notation. So, this notation was not used so far, right? So let's define this inductively. A to the power of 0 is 0, and A I plus 1 is A dot AI. Sorry, you should have protested when I wrote something that didn't make sense. Is it clear now?
Yeah.
Or was it clear from the beginning what I had in mind here?
It was clear enough.
Okay. No, it should not be clear enough, it should be perfectly clear. This is the idea. So if it is not, then it's simply clear. So, any guesses as to whether those two guys are dissimilar? Maybe let's actually draw them. So this is our first. This is how the first guy looks like. How about the other one? Well, it can make all the transitions that A smaller than omega, less than omega could do. But it can also do something else. So we also need to incorporate this A omega bar. So it has an infinite ascending chain of these A transitions. Are those two guys dissimilar? Who wants to be a defender? Who wants to be attacker? You want to be attacker?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, then you're going to be the defender. So what are you going to do? Which of the structures you're going to choose?
Right one.
Okay.
And I'm taking the infinite A part.
What do you want to choose?
Yeah, well, I...
Yeah. It's good. I mean, sometimes you may, depending on the branch you will choose, you will defend yourself longer or shorter. So if we had some timeout, then you could be smart enough to, so for example, if I say I played a match for 90 minutes or 90 steps, then you could choose the branch which is at least 100 or 200 long, and then he wouldn't be able to push you that far. The attacker would not be able to push you that far. But if the game can go long as we please, then sooner or later, whichever branch we're going to choose, it will be. So they are not dissimilar, and we have a simple dissimulation game argument for this. Can you find an example? Yes?
There's a really similar problem in the homework.
Well, probably not by coincidence. Oh, sorry. So, okay, so one of the cause of capital. Well, anyway, then it's just better for you. But okay, so then how about modal formulas? Can you tell those two guys apart using formulas of H of Hennessy-Miller logic?
Not really, because we don't have this notion of which path we choose.
It's going in the right direction. So if we wanted to make all this a bit more formal, then we could first prove a little technical lemma, for which we would introduce one other technical notion, namely the notion of the modal degree of a formula. So, what is modal degree of a formula? Well, modal degree of bottom is the same as modal degree of top, and it is zero. Modal degree of phi and psi is the same as modal degree of phi or psi, and this is maximum of MD, phi MD psi. And modal degree of diamond A phi is the same as modal degree of box A phi, and it is simply modal degree of phi plus 1.
So it's the number of quantificator.
The depth, the innermost depth, the number of, well, we don't call them quantifiers anymore, now we call them modal operators.
Yes, yeah.
Or modalities, simple. Number of modalities, maximal number of modalities under which of nested modalities occurring in a given formula. So, what I am claiming now is that for any, and I leave it to you to prove again by induction as easy exercise, for any phi in HML, we have that A omega possesses phi if and only if A to the power of MD phi, or just to be safe, plus 1, forces phi. Well, this guy is the guy here. So this is just this infinite chain, A. And what we are claiming is that for any, you know, it is very special case of much more general fact, namely that for any modal formula, in order to check if it is satisfied in a given by a given process or in a given point of labor state in labor transition system, we only need to make as many steps as the modal degree of the formula tells us. So you can cut off everything that is farther away. It doesn't matter, it doesn't influence, which cannot be reached in modal degree of 5 steps. It cannot influence its truth at this point. This is another difference between Hennessy-Linder logic and in general modal logics and first order logics. In first order logic, you have this universal quantifier which immediately scans the whole structure. So we can make arbitrary huge jumps. Now, in order to check validity of a given formula, the only steps that you can make, the only things that you can scan, are things which are close enough, within the distance of which are sufficiently A close to a given point, and we even can make it precise how close. So, okay, we are.
So what we're saying is we can capture that difference because we only have finitely many steps.
We can capture this difference because if we take, if we truncate those two guys, yeah, I mean, the truncation of the infinite, so for any given, I should define formally what a truncation is. So if I take only the points which are accessible from the root of this tree in almost net n steps, what I obtain from this thing and what I obtain from this thing will be, well, actually, then they will be similar. So, in particular, this this infinity ascending chain will be turned into a n for the n which we are truncating. So, whichever formula I would cut off this chain so that it does not really make any difference compared to what we have here. Somehow we should be able, with our formulas, to make infinity long journeys. And in the next lecture, when you are going to hear about recursive extensions or extension of fixed points, you will see how this can happen in a simple final language without writing things like infinite disjunction or infinite conjunction or anything like this. But what is the special thing about those two guys is that the root can see infinitely many A successors, right? And maybe this is what the problem is. And that's precisely what the Hennessy-Milner theorem is saying, is that if you have a structure that is finitely branching, you have converse of this result. Two states or two processes which are by the way, does the lecture normally start at 12 or 12:15?
At 12.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know that. I would have come at 12.
It's okay.
So can I continue? Yeah, the recording can be cut off, but then I assume that it starts in the normal time. This is why I was speaking this late. Sorry. I forgot that Lutz is always moving it because he wants to eat lunch. So I have, let's say, 8 minutes now to prove Hennessy-Milner theorem. So the claim is... Let's talk about single LTS. So we are talking about two states being dissimilar inside of a single Lego transition system. Of course, when we have two different LTSs, then we can take disjoint union of the guys and we will And I will not make it precise what it means for an LPS to be finitely branching. I hope that this is clear, right? That every state for any given action has at most finitely many successors. So finitely branching LPS.
Can there be infinitely many actions possible?
This is a good question. So what you are asking about is whether it is true that a given state for a fixed action A has only finitely many successors, but if you look at if you have infinite, because we can have infinitely many actions, if you look at all the A accessible, B accessible, C accessible states, actually we could afford that, but to keep things simple, what was the standard assumption? That the set of actions is finite or not?
Not necessary.
Okay, this was not assumed. Okay, no, so then what I mean by this is that... let's make them the stronger assumption in order to at least to keep proof simple, but I think it could even break down if you don't make it a stronger assumption. That altogether, if you look at the state accessible by all possible actions, or all possible A successors, all possible A, B, C, D successors, altogether the set will be only finite. Is it necessary? Okay, we will see this in the proof. So for a finitely branching LPS, modal equivalence implies BMP simulation. So this is the largest simulation relation. So we should find a good candidate to be contained in this. And we have obvious candidate, namely the relation of modal equivalence. So our claim is then that the relation of modal equivalence between two states is itself a simulation. So we have seen already an example of LPS where this is not true anymore. This the union of these two guys, something like this. Why is it true here? So we have to show that whenever P is HML equivalent to maybe that's like T1 HML equivalent to P2 and A. Let's return to your question. All I need is that for any single for every action, the set of states that you can reach by it will be fine. We will see it now. So I'm now reaching some Q1 by A, and now you or I have to produce an example of some key Q2 here that can be reached by A as well, and which is modal equivalent. So now we are using our assumption. Assume that there is no such Q2. So if you look at the set of all the successors, at the set of all the A successors of P2, there are only finitely many of them. Take maybe let's write it Q1 prime. Q1 prime to be the set of all successors, A successors of P2. Is it clear? So now, because we have assumed that there is nothing that is equivalent to Q1, which can be reached by A from P2, this means that for any I between 1 and n, when this is the number of elements in the set of these successors, there is phi I such that Q1 forces phi, but Q2 does not, sorry, not Q2, there is no Q2, so you assume there is no Q2. Qi prime does not force phi I. Because if for some of, because if for one of these elements there wouldn't be such phi, we would have that this Qi prime is actually going to be equivalent to Q1. Why can I go, okay, you may ask yourself, can it be the other way around, that there is some phi I which is satisfied here, but not satisfied here? But we have, this is precisely where we introduce this notion about complement, the notion of complement, and, it's erased. And this little lemma that said that you satisfy a formula, even you don't satisfy a formula, even only if you satisfy its complement. So we can really, so it's really useful that this language is actually close on that negation. Clear what is going on? So now obviously Q1, not Q1, P1. Satisfies diamond A phi 1 and phi n, because all of these guys are true in Q1, but not the other way around. So, but P2 does not satisfy this. Because at every successor, at least one of these conjuncts will not be true. Contradiction with the assumption that P1 is modally equivalent to, or HML equivalent to P2. So you see how we use the fact that we have only finitely many A successors. But all it means, all we need clearly in this proof is that for any given action there are finitely many successors. Altogether, there may be, I don't know, uncountably many. If you have uncountably many actions, whatever. Okay, sorry for overrunning and sorry for not being aware about the right time and point in this talk. So we already have had one lecture this week on Monday. So it's probably fine if we, the next lecture happens on Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
What we discussed
anyway. Okay. So then Professor Scherer himself will give the lecture.